Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 20th of February, Anno Domini 2016, and you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes. Here comes the news. You'll have to forgive my voice, it's not 100% yet. Ooh. As a legal matter, let me back this up. I don't know if we talked about this at all, but Apple, there were the San Bernardino shooters. The government has their cell phone, and they want Apple to unlock it, and Apple is refusing to do so. As a legal matter, the showdown between the Obama administration and Apple touched off Tuesday by the ruling of a federal magistrate judge in California, turns on an 18th century law. More practically, though, it boils down to this question. Should you be able to lock your phone so securely that even the FBI cannot open it? The Obama administration police officers around the country say no, and their precedent is the past. Homes and cars do not have unbreakable locks. You cannot buy an uncrackable safe. And terrorists and child molesters should not be able to buy handheld computers that keep their secrets forever. Apple, backed by technologists and civil libertarians, say yes. People live their lives electronically. Their phones are a record of loves and fantasies, illnesses and losses. Apple built its recent iPhones to keep those data private and says nothing less than the future of privacy is at stake in this fight. Excuse me. The Justice Department's success in obtaining a court order demanding that Apple help write software to disable those defenses was a significant victory for the Obama administration. It relied on the All Writs Act, a law that can trace its origin to the first Congress in 1789. In short, it says courts can require that people do things to comply with their orders, basically, is what that means.
We can make up any law that as we want as we go along.
And you have to follow it, Basically, is what that says. For months, the Justice Department and Apple have been trading heated rhetoric and lurching toward this very confrontation, only to back away. By the end of last year, it seemed that Apple and other technology companies had won the public relations battle. The attacks in San Bernardino, California in December, however, changed the government's calculation. Syed Rizwan Farooq, one of the two people suspected of killing 14 people, left behind an iPhone 5C, a locked one. The FBI has not been able to gain access to any data on it. For the administration, it is perhaps the perfect test case, one that put Apple on the side of keeping secrets for a terrorist. Mr. Farooq's phone is protected by a password that Apple says it does not keep. It is encrypted with an algorithm this company says it cannot break. The FBI wants to write a computer program to send the phone an unlimited combination of passwords until it finds one that works, but Apple built its phones to protect against that tactic. Each wrong guess causes a short delay, which would significantly slow the FBI's effort. After too many incorrect guesses, the phone will automatically erase its data.
And we just went off the air.
Did we?
Unless that light is wrong.
Well, we're off the air. But those of you who are on, listening to us on the stream are still listening. So I suppose that's okay. We'll still talk to them. Of course, that's also true of Android phones and I believe Windows phones as well. So our poll of the week. At soundbites.org, should the government be able to access your encrypted cell phone data? And the choices are hell no. In extreme circumstances, yes. With the proper warrant. Anytime, God bless them. And you can encrypt your cell phone data? So far, we've got 23 votes. About half of you, more than half of you, say hell no. Followed by in extreme circumstances, yes, with a proper warrant, any time, God bless him. And nobody says you can encrypt your cell phone data. I suspect, however, that most of those of you who voted hell no don't actually encrypt your cell phones, so your votes don't count.
Well, and that's why the manufacturers, Google and Apple, and I think Microsoft too, it's encrypted by default now. With Apple,
yes.
Apple started with iOS 8. The version of Android started encrypting by default. And that's sort of what has brought this to the forefront is now the encryption by default cannot be broken. And all of us would easily say, yes, you know, the bad guys, we need to break into their phones. But the problem and what Tim Cook said in his open letter to the internet community is that it's too dangerous a tool to create. It would set too dangerous a precedent. If we made this tool for the FBI, they say it's only going to be this case. But now that's a precedent. We'll go to the next case, then the next case. Well, then, you know, which FBI office is it? Okay, well, now it's all FBI offices. What about, you know, other federal law enforcement? You know, what about local? You know, some town cop gets mad at his wife and wants to crack her cell phone. What about foreign governments? So it's this huge mess that Apple is trying to stop by stop setting this precedent. And if a tool exists, it will get leaked. You know, Apple may not leak it, but someone at the FBI, you know, is going to pass it to his buddy at another office. And from what I've read, there already are cracks like this on the internet. If you put in the wrong password on specifically on the iPhone, because that's the one I know the best.
Right.
If you put the wrong password in 10 times, it erases the phone. There is a box you can buy on the internet that I think was developed by the NSA that it tries a password and then turns off the phone before the counter can increment.
Oh, nice.
So it never knows you put 10 wrong passwords in.
Right, right.
And so it just takes a long time to try every possible password combination. And from what I read, you can buy this tool for $1 million. And in the FBI's mind, it's easier to make Apple write it and give it to them for free.
Right.
Yeah.
Except the FBI probably already has it, and they're probably already using it.
Well, I doubt the NSA would share it. Yeah. You pay us $1 million. And something like this happened in the telephone industry ages ago. And you see it in TV shows all the time, you know, where the criminals, you know, we dumped the cell phone, we dumped the landline, you know, we got all their call records. It got so tedious for cell companies and before that landline companies to respond to every police request for phone data that all of them have a portal. The police just log into the portal. Type the cell phone number, type the landline number, and get all that data. And you may pay $5 a line or something like that. And so the companies see it as a revenue stream now.
Right.
You don't even need a warrant because the assumption is you'd get one anyway. Right. So it's all these those tools are already there. And the danger is someone's going to abuse them. There have been cases where people have suspected a spouse of cheating or something. So they put a logger on their computer. And there was a case a few years ago where the person was in a hospital and suddenly the entire hospital network got compromised. And we just saw that this week. Was that one of the news stories about the hospital that paid the ransom?
No, I don't know that I got that one. No.
Yeah, there was a hospital that got infected with CryptoLocker, locked out all of the hospital electronic data, and they just paid the ransom to get it back.
$17,000.
Yeah, that was cheaper than that. And they probably spent more than that trying to break the encryption.
Right.
We've heard stories, police departments. There was one in a suburb of Boston a couple of years ago that got infected with it and paid the ransom.
Yep.
And got their data back.
Yep.
And so the bad guys are getting smarter, and we're seeing this problem that how much of your own security do you want to give up so the bad guys can be tracked? And in most cases, they have the data in other ways. They have the personal computer they can get the data from. One of the more chilling things to me was that in Apple's letter, they said and reported by some of the other services too, the FBI requested and got the iCloud backup data because Apple is in possession of that data.
Right.
I thought that was encrypted too with their password.
You would think so.
You would think that. But in the specific San Bernardino case, they stopped doing iCloud backup last October, and so they don't have the last couple of months of data. But there are other avenues. Police have had these avenues for years, but now this is a new technology, and we're fighting between them. And there's legislation pending in New York and California specifically to prevent encrypted phones, basically. So you cannot sell a phone in New York or California. The pending legislation hasn't passed yet and probably won't. But you will not be able to sell a device that cannot be unlocked by the manufacturer, which means I can see Apple stopping all iPhone sales in California and New York.
Yep.
Because
and most Android phones similarly, yep, they're all encrypted by default. So how are they going to sell them?
Right. And if Apple keeps a back door, or writes a backdoor like the FBI wants them to that can break in, and they, oh no, it's only for this specific case, that code will leak. and someone will be able to change it, and so that it will work on any phone. And so that's, you know, there's the future and the precedent, and it's just a chilling thing, and we'll have to see what happens. So the court can order it, but Apple has been saying all along, you know, we don't have that information. And now they're saying we're not going to write that program. And so I'm guessing the court's going to find them in contempt and start charging them.
Yep.
But Apple's got $200 billion in cash on hand.
Really,
so
it's going to be a problem for Apple.
Yeah. And when something happens with a Google phone and a Microsoft phone, Google does the same sort of fighting for data they don't have and encryption they don't have. But right. It's frustrating.
It is frustrating. Well, we know you're going to have more to say about this. So if you scroll down on the right at soundbites.org, that's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, you'll see under Fascinating Stuff, the forums. The second forum down is about the current poll, and the poll discussion, and the top one at the moment, at least, is 20 Feb 16. Should the government be able to access your encrypted cell phone data? There's already five people who've spoken in this, and I believe that you'll have more to say as well. And of course, you can join us. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. We've got about a minute, so we can at least get the question in of Wayne from Henrietta. Oh, we got 4 minutes. Okay. Hiya, Wayne. What's up?
Hi, guys. Fascinating topic.
Thanks.
I have a PC. I built bare bones. It will be 2 years old in May. Originally Windows 8, now Windows 10. Has a nice Asus motherboard and a Cooler Master case. And I have a very intermittent possible problem. Three times in about the last 6 months, on the first cold boot of the PC, apparently one of the fans spins at a very high speed. Sounds like a small vacuum cleaner. If I obviously shut down, I reboot, all is fine. I've opened the case immediately after that. All three fans are running, including the CPU fan. Obviously, I can wait for one of them to fail, but that doesn't sound like the best strategy. Any thoughts on how I can determine what fan it is?
All right, so let me get this straight. When you first turn it on a cold boot, one fan spins at high speed and the other two fans do not spin at all?
No, it seems like all fans are spinning, but it's hard to tell because I have the case is on. Okay. Case cover's on, so I immediately shut it off, boot it up again. Everything's running fine, and all three fans are running. So it's only happened three times in the last 6 months.
Yeah.
And every other time, it boots up just fine. The second boot, the fan, all the fans are spinning fine. I assume that, you know, it's maybe one of the fans is not good, but maybe I know this motherboard has something called Asus Fan Expert 2. Speed control.
Turn your mic on.
I'm sorry.
Oh, sure.
What I would suggest is taking the side off, mm-hmm. and then have a flashlight handy. Mm-hmm. So, because it won't hurt it for a little bit, you know, to do that. It's just going to cool it off faster. But have a flashlight handy so that when you do boot it up, you see if any of the phones are hesitating as far as booting up. And if it's one of the muffin fans, I mean, those are easy to replace.
Well, and I'd almost think, that we see this sometimes in the Mac community too, if the fan is spinning fast, there's nothing wrong with the fan. It's the sensor telling the fan to spin fast.
Right.
So the fan is working. It might be being told to spin fast because it thinks it needs to cool something down.
Mm-hmm.
And the sensors are probably on the motherboard, which is now expensive to replace.
Right. Well, and what may well be happening is some sort of hairline crack somewhere at the sensor. And when the motherboard is cold,
yeah,
that hairline crack has separated. And when the motherboard warms up even a little bit, it expands and that crack closes and you don't have the problem anymore. And again, you would have that problem more in the winter than in the summer.
It's interesting that you say that because the three times that it's happened has been very cold mornings. And it happened a couple days ago. 2 days ago when we had a high of 22, that was the day that it happened. So then my room was really cold.
Yep. I'm almost convinced that that's where the problem lies. And the way you can tell which fan it is, of course, is simply by waiting for another cold day. We're going to have some, so relax. And as Dave said, take the cover off before you turn it on. Open it up, let it go. The other question is, if it spins at a real high speed, but once the motherboard warms up, does it slow down again?
Well, I haven't left it on very long. Once I hear that, I've shut it down pretty quickly in case there's an issue.
At the worst, all you're going to do is kill a fan.
Right. What I did yesterday is I installed from the motherboard. It was an optional install that gives system information, so I can actually, when Windows is booted, I can, because I originally went into BIOS and looked and saw that the fans are all spinning, so that's great.
Right.
But this way I can see the fan speed without when I'm booted in Windows.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes the BIOS will give you the speed of the fans.
And, right. Yeah. Yeah. And that's one thing I was wondering. I'm not sure what normal fan speeds are. I'm looking at it now. The CPU fan is 1025 RPM.
Well, now, whatever it is, it depends entirely on your motherboard. So what you need to do is find the manual for that particular motherboard, and that's the only thing that's really going to tell you. I'm sorry.
Okay, I'm all set. Thank you.
All right, thanks. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nick Francesco, and you. 21 minutes after the hour, Soundbites member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 25 minutes after the hour, we have Don from Greece, New York on the line. Welcome, Don. What's up?
Thank you. Welcome. I'm getting an error about every 5 or 10 minutes, and it says Windows detected a hard disk problem.
Uh-oh.
Back up your files immediately, then contact the computer manufacturer to determine if I need to repair or replace the drive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you should do that.
Yep.
Yep, so this is a hard error, right? That's
yep.
not.
It means, what it means is critical sectors in the hard drive enabling it to boot are going bad on you. I mean, you can have sectors go bad on other parts of the hard drive, and the machine will, up to a point, sit there and mark them as being bad. But once it gets in the critical error of being able to boot properly, that's a definite concern.
Sometimes you can erase the hard drive, do a low-level erase, and then it will map out the bad sectors. But you usually don't want to trust that drive anymore. All drives have bad sectors, but when you get enough to actually see an error message, mm-hmm. that's really bad.
I would say make sure you have a number of good backups, and then get that machine to a qualified...
Or replace the drive yourself, if you know how.
Replace it yourself.
Yeah, I've got two backups, so that I'm good for... but it sounds like I need to purchase a new drive and bring it to somebody and have them put it in.
Yep. You got it. Yep.
Or okey-doke. Most of the stores can provide the drives for you, too.
Yeah. Just go to the store and have them put it in. And you can buy it from them and have them put it in.
They'll load it and everything?
Yeah. They will.
For a fee.
Yeah.
Certainly for a small fee, but it depends. Do you have your Windows disks?
Yes, I've got the Windows 7 disk.
Bring them with you.
Pardon me?
Bring them with you.
Oh, to the store.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I was thinking having Dave do the drive installation, so I was going to pick up a drive off the web.
Yeah, you could do that. And probably then, get it pretty cheap, you know, because drives are so much cheaper out there.
Right.
Yeah, pick one up, bring it over, and we'll get her in for you.
Okay, that's great.
All right.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
All right, thanks.
Yeah, that's one of those error messages you should never ignore.
No, never. Yeah, if you start
especially if
that,
it's coming up every 5 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, you've got a definite issue.
Steve Gibson told a story about his secretary in his company. He had her set up with a RAID system, and so there's no no problem losing a drive. And she called one day and said, I can't get into my computer. And he said, well, it's all right. We got a RAID system. When he gets there, both of the drives were dead.
Yeah, of course.
And she said, I've been getting this message for about 6 months saying that the RAID has failed, but I can click continue and keep working.
Yeah.
So if you make RAID software industry, do not let anyone continue when a drive fails.
You're right.
You think?
Replace the drive now.
Exactly. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Walter, also from Greece, New York. Hi, Walter. What's up?
Hello there, gentlemen. It's great that you provide this radio program for the world.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank Jazz 90.1. They allow us to be on the air.
All right. Well, I have two questions I hope you'll allow, will be able to answer
for me.
One of them is based on dubious security measures that are built into wireless routers, and the other one is upgrading Ubuntu via the software manager. So I'll start with the router, the wireless router. You can go ahead and have make a hidden network, and the other issue is that you can also restrict devices from getting onto your router. What do you? I've read Microsoft says forget about the hidden network, and some others have said, yeah, forget the same thing, that the router is still looking for you out there, sending out signals, and somebody can still get in.
Yeah, both of those features will stop casual breaches, I guess is the right word.
Yeah, they're not bad things to do. They're just never going to hit the real hardcore people. But those people aren't after you anyway.
But a lot of times it's not you they're after. It's anyone with a network to hide themselves.
Right.
So someone can be sitting, you know, in a parking lot, you know, next door on the road. And even though your network is hidden, they can still find it.
Well, let me back up a second for the rest of you. When you look at your wireless network, you will see, when you look at your wireless on your laptop, say, you will see a number of networks that are available. Some are locked, some are not. You can connect to them if you know the password, whatever. Each of those has a name. That name is called an SSID, which is the way it's designated. You can hide the SSID, and that's what Walter is talking about in this particular case. So unless you actually know the name of the SSID, you cannot connect. Now, if you have the right software, you can still tell there's a network there. And if you have the really right hardware, you can find the network name. But generally speaking, that is not easy and that is not common. So having a hidden network means that about 90% of the people who would want to park in your driveway and steal your wireless connection cannot. That plus a good password, 12345678, is not a good password.
It's the same password I have in my luggage.
Unbelievable. It will protect you from almost everything. On top of that, you can use these in tandem, by the way. This is not an either or. You can restrict users to specific MAC addresses. The actual hardware in your computer has what's called a MAC address, the machine access.
And we in the Mac community like that.
You like
even
that.
Your PC users have a MAC address.
Exactly. even we Chrome
even
users
your Chrome have users have a MAC address. Yeah.
If you say only this list of MAC address users can come onto the network, now you're even better protected. People would have to guess that MAC address, and that's what, 8 hex digits, so it's not an easy guess.
But the first 4 are the manufacturer, so those are known, so they really only have to guess 4.
Well, but they have to figure out which manufacturer, too.
Yeah.
Right? So, but it's still a fairly good thing. If you hide the network and restrict the users, you're in pretty good shape. Are you going to stop the NSA from getting to you? No. Are you going to stop the Russian... I don't know.
What took over for the KGB?
Right, whatever. but are you going to stop the average person who's just trolling the neighborhood? Yes.
And you're more likely to get hit by a phishing email than you are someone... Because these are physical attacks. They have to be in physical proximity to your wireless to be
People
able to do this.
People do war drive around neighborhoods, and that means you just wander around the neighborhood sucking up all the wireless connections you can find. And then sorting them out later, finding which ones are open or which ones you can break or whatever. That's called war driving. The thing is, unless you've got fairly sophisticated hardware, you can't even find the hidden networks. And if you also restrict the users on that network, you've added yet another pretty doggone good barrier.
Okay, great. So I'll then especially return to the hidden network part, because I have restricted but as I said, I read forums, people are saying they're useless, but I'll follow your advice. It sounds when
they're not useless. They're useless against the government. They're useless against super sophisticated and well-financed attackers. How many of those are in your neighborhood?
Probably none.
Exactly.
All right. My second question then is repeating it again, is that when you go to the software updater on with an Ubuntu, it says you can upgrade. And we are currently running 12.04 because we avoided the 14.04.
Right.
And now 16.04. These are the long-term service ones.
Right.
And my wife is scared of me going ahead and doing a clean install, which I have read many times is the safest and best thing to do. Because when we did the upgrade from 10 to 12.04,
yeah,
we got some crazy things happening.
Yep.
Like what we had Firestarter, and then I never had for my ID the administrator use. So every time I log into my account, it up comes Firestarter saying, oh, would you want to go make head changes? And it's like, I never had this connection before. And it's gone, and it still remains. And now we've lost it. The craziest part, it comes up even on the login sheet for all the all of the users. It says network disconnected. But I still have. I am connected onto the Ethernet. So,
well, you may have multiple networks.
Particularly
with Firestarter. It may think there's another connection in your hardware somewhere.
Well, we've got rid of uninstalled completely the configuration of Firestarter, and this thing still pops up.
Yeah, you really honestly didn't get entirely rid of it.
Yeah.
But look, here's the deal.
Yeah.
The upgrade is fine. The problem you have with upgrades is the same whether you're on Windows or a Mac or on Linux. If you've got a problem somewhere in your configuration files, upgrading isn't going to fix that.
Okay.
The only way you fix that is with a clean install.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I'm trying to convince my wife is that we didn't like Unity, so we went and used the XFCE4 desktop.
Yep, me too.
It was good, but now it's changed enough because I've looked at the latest, the betas, and whatever else, and I don't like XFCE4 anymore. I'm going to the Lubuntu desktop. It's closer to, you know, the old Windows stuff, and my wife kind of likes that pattern too. And that's where I'm fearful of, like, if I try to get rid of all that stuff with LX, I know I can leave it, but if I try to get rid of it, I may cause other screw-ups. So it's almost like smarter to go right, wait until 16.04 comes out, the latest long-term, install that fresh with all of our backups, and then this way we can have a fresh install of the Lubuntu desktop and be happy ever after, we hope.
Well, yes, I cannot disagree with that. Lubuntu uses LXDE.
Yeah.
Which is here, the other, again, for you Windows and Mac users, you all have one interface, and that's all you'll ever have. Linux users have dozens, probably hundreds for all I know.
Yeah, well, there's a lot.
Yeah, and some of them, like LXDE, will emulate closely the Windows environment. XFCE is very lightweight, very fast. Unity is whatever it is, KDE is slow and pig-like from my point of view, but that's just me. I'm going to get a lot of email now. I haven't used KDE in a long time. It used to be slow and pig-like. Anyway, yeah. LXDE is a fairly lightweight. It's a minimal desktop. It looks a lot like Windows. And, once you pick one, having the other one sitting on your hard drive means nothing. It's just taking up a little disk space. But if you're installing from scratch anyway, install the one you want first and live with it.
Yeah, we're opting to go with the Ubuntu and then put the Lubuntu desktop on top of that because Lubuntu has only a 3-year updating or upgrading or long-term support, 3-year long-term support, while the Ubuntu will give us 5 years. So we figure, well, we can go 4 and then leap over the next ones and everything like that.
Sure.
So
sure.
It makes sense that way. All right. I'm recording this on a cassette recorder so my wife can hear it later. And
very retro.
Then, right. It works beautiful. And she can hear it and be convinced then let's go clean install.
Oh, so now you're going to blame this on us.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
No, right. On you. Steve and I are out of this one.
Yeah.
You do not hear
right,
our
I got
voice.
Wide shoulders. Go ahead.
Well, very good, gentlemen. Thank you very, very much.
All right, thank you. Good luck.
Good luck. Thank you.
All right, with that, we're going to take another quick break. We'll be back in just a couple. I like this. I like this music. Yeah. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nina Francesco, and you. It's groovy, and it's 39 minutes after the hour at Soundbites. Member-supported Jazz, 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Don on the line. Where are you calling from, Don?
I'm calling from St. John's Meadows in Brighton.
Sure.
My question is about Chromebooks.
Yep.
I'm wondering, I'm thinking of using it for looking at slides, digitized that I put on a stick. And I'm wondering if I can put programs on it, such as Earfan View or things like that.
No, you can't. The thing about a Chromebook is it's designed specifically to run stuff directly from the internet, mostly through a browser. So programs that you would normally use under Windows or a Mac or whatever do not run, generally speaking, on a Chromebook. There are programs that do. Google Photos, of course, is one of them. Pixlr, the Pixlr editor will run on it. But generally speaking, you'd have to find essentially an online equivalent. Photo or Photo Editor, for example, would do it. But generally speaking, you'd have to find some form of online program that would view what you wanted to see.
Wouldn't the browser read a JPEG just flat by itself?
Well, if it's JPEGs.
Yeah, so if you scan it as a JPEG, then the Chrome browser will just open it.
The Chrome browser. Well, I'll have to try that on my tablet and see how well that works.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, because I was kind of wondering, there are programs out there. If I go looking for them, then that maybe it would work. And I could try it out on my tablet to see what I think of it.
Yep.
Okay. I'm just kind of curious because the other thing is, does it have an, I don't remember what you call the output plug that so I could view it on a large screen.
Well, it depends on which one you buy, but I do know that the one at St. John's Meadow, they have that large screen in the room we're in for the Rochester Googles. That connects to something called HDMI.
Yeah.
And almost every Chromebook has an HDMI connector, and that particular screen at St. John's Meadow will indeed handle HDMI input.
Okay, because I was trying to debate if I want to go to a Chromebook or buy an inexpensive desktop.
Right. No, I do understand that, and it really does depend on what you're doing with it. In terms of the Chromebook, probably your best bet is if you can wait, put a bunch of pictures on a stick and bring it to the next Rochester Googles meeting, and we'll try it on one of the Chromebooks.
Okay.
And see what happens.
Yep. Okay. Well, thanks a lot.
Yep. My pleasure.
Just trying to decide what to do. So
no, I get it.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks. And for those of you who would like to join us, we meet St. John's Meadow the first Thursday of every month, 7 o'clock at St. John's Meadow. I already said that for Rochester Googles. And you can find us both on Google Plus and on that Facebooky thing. And you can see what it is that we do and where we do it and how we do it. And we would love to have you join us. We talk about Chromebooks and other Google things and pretty much whatever anybody wants to talk about. Please feel free to join us.
What if you Google?
Go ahead. It works.
Yep.
Don't Google recursion, however.
So that's what I'm going to do.
You Google recursion, and the first thing it says is, did you mean recursion?
Well, yes. Yes, I did. There are some really smart people at Google that have a great sense of humor.
Yeah, they do. I honestly, I have no idea what this says. Gerd, how are you, Gerd? What's up?
No, it says Gred.
It doesn't matter. Gerd, are you there?
Yes, I am.
What's up?
I'll tell you, my name has been spelled so many different ways, I forget how to spell it.
I bet. No, I apologize. I wrote it wrong.
No problem. Okay,
the phone was acting up on me.
Yeah, it was the phone's fault.
No, I lost two calls.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
For those of you who got dropped, please call back.
Yeah, please call back. Yes.
All right, so what's up, Gerd?
Chromebooks.
Yeah.
Do they make one that has a CD tray on the side?
Nope. Not that I know of.
That takes care of that. Now,
everything's downloadable from the internet. You don't need CDs anymore.
Yeah. No, I don't know of any one of them out there that
there
has
are
a CD.
USB CD drives.
Right.
Would they work or with drivers?
Well,
what's a mass storage?
There is a file
USB
app,
mass storage,
which would be able to read pretty much anything, yeah. But generally speaking, Chromebooks are not regular PCs. And you don't do the regular PC things with them. And so if you want to, for example, load a program like EarthEnview, which Don wants to do, or if you want to run a CD like Gerd wants to do, the basic answer to that is no. Are you talking about being able to load programs or to look at videos or what?
Well, Tax Act has a CD that you put in a tray, and it brings up what you need to do, fill in the things.
Well, that only runs on a specific operating system.
Right.
So you'd have to get Tax Act for Windows, Tax Act for Mac, and they probably don't make a Tax Act for Chrome.
All right.
Right. Chrome is its own operating system. It is not Windows. It is not a Mac. It is not, well, it is Linux underneath, but it is not Linux. So any of the things that you would normally run for those is not, you cannot just throw them in a Chromebook and they will work.
But you most likely can do the online versions because it's a web browser.
Right, you can do the online version of any of those without an issue.
Well, I still have my Windows 7, and I'll stick with that when it comes to my taxes.
There you go.
By the way, I am a member, and I'm surprised that you guys don't mention to people they should sign up.
They should. We are going to be having a fun drive shortly, but we are always more than happy to accept people's donations, and we would love anyone to become a member anytime they want. To help support this station and keep this station and this show on the air.
You got it.
Thanks, Gerd.
Keep up the good work.
We'll do our best. Thank you. Keep listening.
Bye-bye.
And speaking of taxes, New York State has a free e-filing tax service. And that button is still on. New York State has a free tax service for very basic taxes if you're not, doing the Schedule C or not doing a lot of weird deductions. You can file for free at New York tax.ny.gov.
Right. Make sure you're at tax.ny.gov, not fake
somewhere
place.
Else. Yeah.
Yeah.
Although the New York State does contract with a couple of national tax companies, but if you start at New York State, you're going to be at the right place.
Right. Right. One of the things that we're seeing a lot of is that people. They take out very close names.
Yep.
So tax.ny.gov, they might take tax.nys. Something, I don't know, whatever.
G-O-V. G-0-V.
They might do that, yeah.
Yep.
All right, our next caller is Wesley. Where are you calling from, Wesley?
From Colesville, New York. That's about 10 miles west of Attica.
Nice. What can we do for you?
Chromebook. Can that operating system be installed on a desktop?
Yes. There is a website called Neverware, NEVERWARE. Steve will post the link shortly on our webpage.
Okay.
They have a product called Cloud Ready. I have installed it on, and I know this is going to hurt you, I've installed it on a very old Mac, and it runs great. It really looks like, sounds like, works exactly like a Chromebook. So if you have an old laptop that's you don't want to, you can't upgrade, whatever, you can install Cloud Ready on it, and it will now work exactly like a Chromebook, and you can play with it and decide. It'll boot up a lot slower. Chromebooks boot up in under 8 seconds, but this will take a much longer to boot up. But once it's up and running, it runs very, 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 very exactly, really, like a Mac, like a Chromebook. And so you'll be able to play with it and test it. It's called Neverware. Okay. Nevermore is a raven.
Nevermore. You can also get a Chromebox, which is a desktop version of the Chromebook.
I see. Well, I was thinking of an old computer. It's got XP on it.
Yeah, yeah. You don't need a lot of RAM. You don't need more RAM is better, faster processor, better, blah, 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 blah. But you can certainly run it on old hardware. Be aware that it will be as slow as XP was on that machine. I mean, it's not going to be.
My auto spell checker fixed it for me.
Yeah, there you go.
It fixed it for me.
Fixed it. So, it'll be slow, of course, because it's old hardware, et cetera, et cetera. But it should run, and you should be able to tell whether or not you like a Chromebook enough to at some point buy a better model if that's what you want to go with.
And one of the reasons the Chromebooks boot so fast is that most of them use flash drives and not spinning hard drives.
Right.
In fact, that's getting common in a lot of computers now. Flash drives are so much faster than spinning mechanical drives, but the capacity is a lot smaller for the price. Solid-state flash drives cost about twice as much per capacity as a spinning drive.
Although they're coming down fast.
We've been saying that for years. It used to be 10 times as much.
Right.
I remember one terabyte flash drive was $1,500 when a couple of our customers wanted one.
Yep. But, of course, you don't need much storage on a Chromebook because you store everything on the Google Cloud, and you store everything up in the cloud, and so you don't have to worry about storing stuff on your computer. It's a different way of thinking. But it certainly works.
I like the headline at Engadget. Neverware turns your tired laptop into a speedy Chromebook.
Well, and it does. I mean, because it's essentially just a browser, it's much faster. I mean, if you take an old laptop, it takes forever to boot up, takes forever to get to the desktop, takes forever to start Word or whatever. But once you start your browser, it's speedy because it's all in the browser.
Yep.
And the same thing would be true with this. Sorry, what?
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you, Wesley.
Have a good day.
You too. I can't say enough good stuff about my Chromebook. Like I said, I'm using one here. Certainly a faster processor is better. Certainly more RAM is better. If you're going to run it on a very old machine, it's going to be as slow as that very old machine was. And blah, 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 blah. But it once you get, for example, I do a lot of writing, and I do it all in Google Docs now. And that's very fast, no matter what processor I'm on, because it's all running in the cloud.
Yep. And Neverware is free for individual and experimental use.
Right.
So I'm experimenting with it. Yeah. But
right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Pretty cool. And it's only $59 per license for regular educators.
Right. For educators. And I think that's because it also includes the educational bundle thing.
The management console, too.
Yeah. The management console.
And,
that's the thing.
And tech support.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Larry from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Larry. What's up?
Good afternoon, guys. I'm back with another question.
Okay.
This one's probably more an opinion, and I'll hang up and listen to what you have to say. I just retired. And,
good for you.
Thank you, sir. And
you're not in Rochester anymore, are you?
Beg your pardon?
You're not in Rochester anymore, are you?
I'm still in Rochester.
Okay.
My wife's got me stuck here now with grandkids.
So,
we'll see. After so many years at Xerox, I am kind of weaned, on Microsoft Office, if you will.
Sure.
And, of course, now I need to buy a laptop. So, obviously, I'm going to get a Mac because I have a larger Mac here at home. I want to put Office on it, but I'm kind of up in the air. It looks like now you can actually, I guess you would call it rent Office.
Yes.
Essentially, yeah.
I just kind of want to listen to your opinions about renting it, if you will, a monthly payment versus just buying the thing outright and installing it. I do have it on my Mac at home, and it looks like you can put it on multiple PCs or something like that. But, you know, renting this thing for 4 years to me looks like, hey, I could have bought it several times over, I guess. I'll hang up and listen to your opinion about it.
All right, thanks.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Larry.
Yep. Yeah, a lot of companies have started going to software licensing.
Right.
So that it's an annual license fee instead of the perpetual license that we're used to. So they had to rename what we're used to, where you buy the program once and that's it until you want to buy a new version of it. So Microsoft actually has a pretty good deal with their perpetual license. With their Office 365 annual license. So Microsoft Office is about $150 for one computer. And that's what they call their student and teacher version, Word, Excel, and PowerPoint, Outlook, and OneNote, I think it is. And their Office 365 is their subscription service. And so for $100 a year, you get, 5 computers, 5 phones, and 5 tablets. And so that makes a really good deal in a household that has several devices. So instead of paying $150 for each device, it's $100 a year. But as he pointed out, after 3 or 4 years, you could have paid it off.
Right.
But what the subscription gives you is when the new version comes out, you automatically get it included in your subscription. So you don't have to buy the new version. It's automatically part of your $99 a year subscription. So that's a pretty good deal, especially if you have multiple devices. But if you stop paying for it, it stops. It'll open your files, but then you get a watermark saying demo.
Right.
And so it stops working.
All right, we'll talk more about this when we come back. We're going to take a slightly longer break. You've wasted an hour of your life, but this isn't over by any means. We're going to be back after a slightly longer break with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. For no discernible reason, you continue to listen to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites on the, and let us not forget this, truly great and solely member-supported. That's you people. Solely member-supported by you folks. Right here, Jazz 90.1, back in just a couple of minutes. So don't go away.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Sound Bites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we had a question from Larry about Microsoft Office. There are a number of ways you can get Microsoft Office. You can certainly buy it. You can also run it online at office.live.com. You can sign in, and you can run Word and Excel and PowerPoint and pretty much dang near anything. And you can run it purely online. I can actually do that for my Chromebook if I want to. You can also connect it directly to your Office on your machine. So there's a lot that you can do without having to actually... I'm using office.live.com for free. I don't think I ever paid for it. I don't recall doing so, certainly. It's free.
Yeah, it looks like all of your files will be stored in the cloud.
Everything gets stored in the cloud.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can download them without owning Office. That I don't know.
Yeah, it looks like it's online only if you want desktop versions. So it starts at $99 a month or $100 a year, which gives you, 2 months free if you buy a year at a time. And it's, again, you know, five computers, five tablets, and five phones. So technically you get 15 devices for $99 a year.
Right, right, right. It says it's free.
Well, when you buy the version.
Right, right, right. Yeah. But if you use it online, it's free.
It's all free, yeah. Yeah. And since Larry said he's getting a Mac, that will come pre-installed with Apple's Office Suite.
Right.
Pages, Keynote, and Numbers, which is functionally equivalent to Microsoft Office and will read and write Microsoft Office files. A lot of people start with that because it's free with your Mac.
Right. And you know what? Free is lovely. Yep. So our advice to Larry would be try
iWork.
iWork. Because it's free.
iWork, you work, if we
you
all just, work.
We all work. If you don't like it, you can certainly try,
One of the others.
Office.live.com for free. You can also try Google Drive for free.
LibreOffice and OpenOffice.
LibreOffice and OpenOffice are also free before you go spending money. And all of them read and write. Yep. Word and PowerPoint and Excel.
I notice all these frees here. Where's Microsoft getting their money from? The Windows 10 license you're going to have to start paying for.
That's exactly right.
Well, it'll all come in time.
And a lot of people are like Larry. The only thing they know is Office, and so they think they have to actually buy it.
And if that's what you're used to, that might be the most convenient.
And there are certain high-end features that you really need something like Word for. 99% of people don't need those.
Yeah, things. I was going to say, most of us. Yeah. Google Docs does everything for me.
Right, exactly. And for most people.
What is Microsoft Sway?
Sway?
That's part of Microsoft Office Online.
I don't know. Sway.
Microsoft Sway. Access is the one thing none of the free versions include.
Right.
But you can do a simple database in Excel or other spreadsheet program. And most people that need a database just need a list of information. In fact, you may not realize it, but your address book program is a pretty decent database.
Yeah, it really is.
And most of the address book programs will store email addresses, postal addresses, birth dates, anniversaries, reminders. On the Mac especially, the calendar talks to your address book. So if you put somebody's birthday or anniversary in, it automatically shows up on your calendar. Google's calendar does that as well.
Yep.
So it's a pretty decent database right built into itself.
Yeah. Pretty cool stuff. Pretty cool stuff. We don't take advantage of those things as much as we could.
It's the 80-20 rule.
Right.
80% of the people use 20% of the features.
Mm-hmm. Right. I tell you what though, I am in the Google ecosystem and it tells me everything I need to know, when I need to do stuff, who I need to do stuff with.
Mm-hmm.
I can tap on a thing and say, call that person. It works with my watch. I got I have the LG G Android smartwatch. I got it on ridiculously low price on Woot. If you don't know what Woot is, WOOT.com, I apologize for telling you about it. They have a new deal every day.
Yep.
So, and when that deal is done, it's done. So go early in the morning. And they have multiple sections. There's
64-inch 4K TV for a grand.
For $1,000. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. They have electronics and computers and kids stuff and T-shirts and
Samsung
wine.
Too. It's a name brand.
Yeah,
it's a refurbished.
It's refurbished.
Yeah, but
it's
still in all.
I bought a number of refurbished things for them, and you get a warranty, and I've never had a problem. And the TV I have now is a refurb from then. It's 3 years old, and it still works great.
Yeah.
So it's 4.5 years old, and it still works great.
Time goes by fast.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? Woot. One day they had the, and you know, people have been asking me about the smartwatches, and I've always said I want one, but I'm not going to pay $250 for one. So when the refurb came up at $60, I thought, yeah, okay.
Yeah, for $60.
Yeah, for $60, if it works for a month and a half.
Like you say, it still carries a warranty.
And it still carries the warranty, and it's working great. And I just got a text from my daughter, so I'm very excited about that.
Oh, one other thing I been following.
Yeah,
the new Galaxy 7 phone.
Yeah.
Is this Monday they're going to be releasing it, and the official sell date is supposed to be the beginning of March. And it's supposed to have a lot of enhanced features that the Galaxy Note 5 didn't have or lacked.
Yep.
Camera and everything else. And they're going to have two versions of the 7, both the Edge and the regular.
Yep.
little bit bigger screen.
It's a very pretty looking little phone. I'll tell you that right now.
A lot more features.
Yeah. All right. Here is possibly my favorite story. And of course, you can give us a call. 585-966-5299, 800-790-0415. But in the meantime, I love this story. On Thursday, the Federal Communications Commission approved a Notice of Proposed Rulemaking, or NPRM, that seeks to give consumers more choice in the set-top boxes they use to watch cable TV. And NPRM is not a final vote. Instead, this kicks off a months-long public comment period leading up to a final vote that is likely to happen before the end of the year. The FCC is essentially trying to create a software-based replacement for cable card, which is the little card you have to put in any device you connect to your cable box. If you have a box from Time Warner or Comcast or whoever, it has cable card built in. Pay TV operators from the cable, satellite, and telco industries would have to provide content and programming information to makers of third-party hardware or applications. Theoretically, customers could then watch their TV channels on various devices without needing to rent a set-top box from their cable company and without buying equipment that is compatible with a physical cable card. One possibility is that new set-top boxes could combine online video sources with cable TV channels. The proposal has been criticized by cable companies and Republicans. Critics said it would force cable companies to build new hardware and require customers to rent even more boxes. They also say the proposal would let third-party set-top makers insert their own advertising into pay TV content and undermine programming agreements between programmers and pay TV companies. The chairman of the FCC accused these proponents of spreading misinformation. Nothing in this item requires a second box in the home, he said. There's nothing in here that allows third parties to disaggregate cable content or sell advertising around it. It takes the same system that goes to the cable box today with the same structures and moves it through a different box requiring the same structures. As a result, existing copyrights and programming agreements are unaffected. Consumer privacy is protected. Emergency alerts are passed through and child protection laws are unaffected. Nothing in this proposal slows down or stops cable innovation. Wheeler said that the new rule will prohibit makers of set-top boxes and apps from putting extra advertising around pay TV content. You heard me. Will prohibit them. Pay TV companies will be required to deliver a few information streams to makers of other set-top boxes and apps. They include channel listings, video on demand lineups, information about what a device is allowed to do with content, such as recording, and the actual programming consumers are entitled to receive. Customers would still need a cable TV subscription for this to work. Pay TV companies have 2 years, or would have 2 years to comply.
2 years.
So what do you think? Give us a call about this, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
Now, will this actually stem the tide of people leaving cable TV to begin with for straight internet television?
Well, I don't think so, because it doesn't change the basic paradigm of I want to watch what I want to watch when I want to watch it, as opposed to I have to get it on your schedule and or record it and or whatever.
Yeah.
Right. So if I have CBS All Access or whatever they call it, and I want to watch NCIS, assuming they're on CBS, at 2 o'clock in the morning, I can just access it and go.
Right.
So it's more like on demand.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And on demand is an extra service that you pay for.
Right. So what we're seeing is so many people are ditching their cable box for internet only.
Right.
That this it's almost. Seems to me too little too late, especially if they've got 2 years before it might happen.
Well, it would seem to me if I were a cable provider, I would be all right. For this.
Well, the cable companies are scared to death of people dropping cable TV.
But this actually locks you back into cable TV. You actually now still pay for cable. And that means that, so you can get it on your Chromebook, or you can get it on your Mac, you can get it on your tablet. I don't care. You're still paying me to get it.
Right. And you don't need the physical box anymore. Which is basically just a little computer running software.
Yeah, really, that's all it is. And it's got a hard drive in it. And the hard drive is undersized and underpowered. But, okay, never mind. The point really is, as Steve says, it's just a computer. So I can build a computer. There's MythTV, MYTH TV, which is a Linux box that becomes its own DVR and its own everything else. But in order to connect it to a cable system, you have to buy a cable card, and that means you have to buy the hardware that will allow you to connect the cable card to your computer.
There's a quote from Tom Wheeler, chairman of the FCC. He said, let's have the cable company say, you want to pay for my interface because it does everything you want. Right now they're saying you must pay for my box.
Right. Well, this is the problem that they've had for, approximately ever.
Yeah.
They had a lock-in. They were a monopoly. And now suddenly
there was
they're
nothing
not,
else
and
the
they
time.
Don't know yeah. how to handle that.
Yep.
They only know how to hold tighter to something that's just slipping between
right.
their fingers.
And ironically, that's happening to streaming services like Netflix and Hulu now, that the content partners that put shows on, say, Netflix, are going possibly to stream them themselves. I hear a lot of the CW shows like Arrow and Flash and the new Legends of Tomorrow. They do great on Netflix. But if CW starts their own streaming service, they're going to take them off of Netflix.
Right.
So the danger there is that we're used to, say, paying $10 a month for Netflix and getting all these channels. Suddenly now, and we have to stop thinking of channels. We got to think of shows. Right. Instead of paying once for Netflix, we're going to have to pay for the CBS app. We'll have to pay for the Netflix app, the Hulu app, the ABC app, the History app, the Showtime app.
Yeah,
so all these little apps are going to add up.
That's what I did.
And be more than what your cable bill already is. So you may not be able to...
Well, that's what happened.
Yeah, so you have to pay attention to what shows you actually watch
right.
and compare it to what your cable bill is now.
Well, that's what I did do.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking of seriously dropping cable, and I priced out these various... because of the shows I want to watch.
Right.
And I thought, all right, with this one, I've got to have this one, I've got to have this one, and I've got to have this one. Well, you start adding them up, and it's like, wait a minute. My cable bill is still cheaper.
Yeah, $10 a channel doesn't sound much until you realize that I like 20 different channels that you would then have to buy separately. So people have wanted a la carte programming forever. And now that it's here, it can cost more than your current bundle.
That's exactly right.
If you watch other things besides, you know, the main three networks.
Right. All right, listen, we're close to a break here, but we can at least get a question from Mark from around the Coit and then answer it after the break. What's up, Mark?
Hi, good afternoon. Greenlight internet service seems to be coming to my neighborhood.
Good for you.
Right, that's right. I think I've heard you talk about it. I'm just listening for an opinion, I guess, because all I have now is Time Warner internet, and it works all right. But I've heard Greenlight would be faster, etc. So I'm just looking for some opinions. Is it worth going over?
This is my personal opinion, and I don't mean to turn it into a commercial or any of that stuff. But I'll tell you what, I have
hell yes,
hell yes. Yeah.
That's fine. That's fine.
I have Greenlight, and I love it. It's fast. And it's fast.
That's good.
And well, it's inexpensive. Comparatively, much cheaper.
Right. Even from a comparison standpoint, Greenlight is twice as fast or half the price.
All right.
The problem is it's not available in all neighborhoods yet. You can go to the Greenlight website and you click sign up for service, but you're not really signing up. You're telling them that you're interested, and so they know what neighborhood to go to next.
Right, that's what I've done, signed up for service through their website, and I'm getting emails now saying that they're pretty close to coming to the neighborhood.
Yeah. All right, we got to take a break, but we'll talk about this a little more when we come back. It's 20 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we're talking to Mark from, from Irondequoit. But I will tell you one thing about Greenlight. I have it, and I've never been happier. You can see on their website 100 megabits down and 20 megabits up is only $50 a month. Nobody in town can match that price. You can go up to gigabit if you want to pay for it, which is only $100 a month. So it's not like, wow, it's going to cost me forever. But it's great. Even at 100 megabits, over the summer when my daughter was home, She was watching a movie on Netflix. My wife was watching a different movie on Netflix. I was watching a different movie on Netflix. My wife and my daughter were both playing games online. I was downloading a new version of Linux. There was no hesitation anywhere. It's fast. It's clean. Anything you can do to get faster internet connectivity is beautiful. Also, what my next door neighbor found when they sold their house was that, having Greenlight in their house was a draw to people who wanted to move in.
Yep.
So
nice.
It's not a bad thing at all. Wherever you get your fast internet connectivity is wonderful. And that's the way it is. All
and
right.
there are other fiber companies in Rochester. They're just more geared toward businesses. Greenlight is the first one to really target residential.
Right, and it's the only one I have personal experience with. Our next caller is Matt, calling from South Buffalo, New York. Welcome, Matt. What's up?
Hey, how you doing today, Nick? I have a general, like, generic question.
Yeah.
I got an older Toshiba laptop, okay? And, you know, it's getting up there in age. My question to you is, how long do you think those backlights for the bulbs and the screens last for? Like, am I going to have to replace it sometime soon?
Depends.
Yeah, soon is always relative. I've seen them go in a year. I've seen them last 10 years.
Yeah. It's
the average? Is it the luck of the draw or something?
You got it.
Pretty much.
There is what they have done is they've changed the technology. Earlier LCD screens would use a fluorescent backlight, a CCFL, and the newer ones use an LED backlight. You see that in televisions too.
And they last longer.
The LED backlights are lower power, lower temperature, and last longer.
They're also a cleaner light.
Cleaner light than the CCFLs.
Less strain on the eyes,
and no,
too.
No mercury that the CCFL uses.
Right.
So I get a little annoyed when I see these LED televisions being advertised. No, they're not LED televisions. They're LED backlit LCD televisions.
Right. Anyway, Matt, the deal here is this. As with any hardware component, it is completely the luck of the draw. We have some real data on hard drives because Google's been using millions of hard drives a year for the past 20 years. And the average lifespan of a hard drive is 5 years. Now, what that means is some of them last 10 years, some of them die out of the box. And the same thing is true as the backlights on a laptop. Some of them will last you 20 years, some of them will die out of the box. So it's really a complete crapshoot as to what you get and how long it lasts.
And one of the annoyances, especially with laptops, is that the backlights are usually part of the LCD panel, and you often cannot replace just the backlights. You have to replace the entire LCD panel, which then triples the cost.
Right.
Well, hey, I really appreciate your guys' advice. Thanks a lot, man, and have a nice weekend.
Yep. Thanks, you too. And have fun in Buffalo with the snow.
Was it last week? It was warmer in Buffalo than it was here.
Yes, we hate it when they win.
with the backlights, you'll often see, there's usually two backlights, one on each side, and you'll see one side or the other getting a little dimmer than the other side, and then you can tell which backlight is out. But usually you then have to replace the entire LCD panel, which is very frustrating. But it's that you can have it easy, or you can have it cheap, or you can have it good. Pick one.
Yep.
No, fast, cheap, good, pick any two.
Yeah.
All right, our next caller is Dave from Webster, New York. Welcome, Dave. What's up?
Good afternoon. I have a MacBook Pro that's currently running on Snow Leopard version 10.6.8. And taking the advice of the panel, I'd like to add some security to that. So I went to the Sovo site and the Malwarebytes site. Both expect the computer to have at least 10.8.
Yeah, we're seeing more and more software need newer systems. The current system version is 10.11, so you're pretty far behind. What was the other one? There's Avast, I think. Well, I think one of them still supports 10.6. Or you can upgrade your computer to a newer system version. I think you can still find 10.7 and 10.8 on Apple's electronic stores. 10.7 was $30, 10.8 was $20, and then they started going free. And
but you have to have at least 10.8 to get the free.
No, you have to have 10.6 to get free.
Okay.
So theoretically, you could install 10.11 for free on your computer, but most likely it will need more RAM. You want at least 4 gigs, if not 8 gigs of RAM to run the newer operating systems. And it's the same thing people have run into in the Windows world. They're running XP and Windows and Vista, and they could install Windows 10, but they probably won't like it very much. So if you can find an older system version, you can download it. Do you know what year your computer is?
Yes, it was late winter 2011. It's running out of the i5 processor.
Yeah, and how much memory?
Four.
An i5 and
so
4 gigs.
I'm barely squeaking by on the memory.
Yeah, so you could run 10.11. More memory would help. But it could be done. Or you can try upgrading to 10.7, 10.8, or 10.9. But 10.9 was free on the App Store and no longer available. When the new version comes out, they stop selling the old version. But ironically, they are still selling 10.7 and 10.8 on the electronic Apple Online Store. So you can upgrade to 10.7 or 10.8 that way.
It sounds to me like I'm better off biting the bullet on this and planning for the future instead of just next week in terms of the operating system,
right,
and then adding the
right
essential security items that you folks have recommended.
What we find is there's always that point where you have to make the decision between upgrading and buying new.
Time to buy new.
Yeah.
I think you're right.
Thank you very much, fellas.
Yep. And it looks like Avast still has a Mac version that runs on 10.6 as well. So you still can run Avast 2015 for their free antivirus. But one of the changing threats, though, is that we're not seeing that many viruses as a class. We're seeing fake ads, and we're seeing fake emails. I've been getting a whole bunch of emails lately from Citibank saying I need to click here to check my... Some of them said there's a problem on my account. The latest one says there's a deposit waiting to be posted. Please click here.
Very nice.
Oh, goody. So the threat of a virus has dropped because there's newer threats that are easier for the bad guys to do.
Right.
So it's in that case, we've got the Malwarebytes has a Mac version, but as you noticed, it requires system 10.8. There is an older version called Adware Medic, which is what Malwarebytes purchased, that runs on the older systems. It doesn't find all the latest threats because they haven't been updating the definitions for the old program,
right,
but it is a place to start.
Right, better than nothing.
Yep.
All right, our next caller is Ken from Webster, New York. Welcome, Ken. What's up?
Good afternoon.
It is.
My wife told me that it was said there that some of the calls were dropped. Well, I dropped a couple of them because I couldn't manage the phone and the bathroom at the same time. A little TMI.
TMI, yeah. There, Ken. Yeah,
I know. Here's why I'm calling. I'm possibly going to be a candidate for a Chromebook.
Good for you.
And I'm calling in response to a call that was made last week. A lady called up, and she wanted to take a file, I believe, that I got to stress that word, believe, put it on her flash drive.
Mm-hmm.
And she was having trouble doing that. And you were off last week, Nick, and your contemporaries did the best job they could in answering that question. But she didn't really walk away with her answer.
What it is in the files, you got to go into the apps, the files, and you can then plug in that USB drive. It shows up.
All right. Let me just ask my question direct.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times when I'm using a PC, let's say there's a file, a picture of a horse or whatever on the internet.
Yeah.
And I want to save that. I can save that directly to the flash drive.
Yep.
What I understand with a Chromebook, I either got to put it on Google Drive or put it on the downloads and then transfer it. Is that correct?
That's a lovely question, and I'm going to do that right now.
Basically, yes. But with,
I don't like that feature.
With Google Drive, you get unlimited storage of photos.
I don't want to put it on the cloud.
Then
I'm not going to use the cloud. I don't want to use Google Drive.
That's the whole point of a Chromebook, is everything you do is on the cloud.
That may be the point for you guys, not for me.
Then
but
the Chromebook
I believe
may
you
not.
Probably don't want a Chromebook.
No, that's not necessarily true. I don't want another PC.
Well, okay. Well, good for you. I don't know what else to tell you. I don't know that you can have both, but I'm trying this right now. I've got a little picture of a horse here. I'm going to take a look at the image. There it is. And I'm now going to say save image as, and it gives me the choice of putting it in my downloads folder. So now I'm going to close that, and I'm going to stick a
thumb drive
on there. Give me a second. This makes great radio.
Mm-hmm. There are also a bunch of file manager apps you can download as well to get to your local file store.
Okay, except I can't quite see what the hell I'm doing.
You try it the first way, it doesn't work. You try it the second way, it doesn't work. You try it the third way, and it works.
There we go. so now I say save image as. And lo and behold, one of the choices to save it on is my jump drive. So I say there, and I say save. And
like
there it is, Majestic Stallion downloaded. Open the folder, and the folder it's opening is on the Atom drive, and lo and behold, there it is on the Atom drive directly.
But it's not as direct as taking that file off the internet and putting it directly on a flash drive, is it?
That's exactly what I just did.
Oh, yeah. You did?
Mm-hmm. I said save this. It opened up the files app just the same way you would open up, you know, the save as. It's a save as app.
Okay.
And one of the choices was my Atom drive, so I clicked on that.
Which is the name of his flash drive.
Which is the name of my flash drive. One of the choices was my flash drive. I clicked on that. You would have to do that on any other machine at two.
Okay.
And I clicked on that. It showed me the list of files on my flash drive. I said save, and it saved it directly to my flash drive.
That's probably FAT32, right?
Probably. It's only an 8 gig.
So it runs on any platform. Mac, Windows, Linux, Chrome, yeah.
Well, I can tell you this. I've always been this way. I'm the person, when people talk me through a problem, I'm not as good at recognizing the solution, not that this is complicated, as actually seeing it. In fact, there's a person in my background that if I really get in the crap, and he tries to help me out over the phone, he'd rather just come to my house. So I'll make a contribution, Nick, if you make a house call. How's that?
I don't do house calls, but thank you.
I know. I'm only kidding.
There's YouTube videos that show how to do it, too.
Yeah, and believe me when I tell you that it is exactly.
It is that easy.
Okay.
Like doing it on a Windows box or a Mac or a Linux box or any place else. It is exactly the same.
Because we had that same call just 2 weeks ago. The gentleman wanted to hook up a portable hard drive. The USB port, and that's how we told him to do it.
Okay, in other words, he took whatever he had and put it right on the hard drive.
Yep.
Most likely it needs to be FAT32, which is sort of the universal format.
Probably. Okie doke?
Yeah, I really appreciate that information because it's going to put me closer and closer to Chromebook.
And let me also suggest that if you want to actually see it in action, please come to Rochester Googles the first Monday. First Thursday of every month at St. John's Meadows, and we'll be happy to demonstrate it for you.
Well, I hope you're not put off by this. Anybody that helps me, I tell this to everybody. If I was right there right now, I'd either give you a hug or a kiss.
I'll take both.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Why would I be put off by
Pick
that?
Pick one, yeah.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, fellas.
Have fun. Take care.
All right, bye-bye.
Can you get to the Rochester Googles website?
I don't know.
Is it them or is it the proxy we're behind? I can't get there. I can get to the Netplex directory listing. So Rochester Googles is one of the local user groups. This one's specifically for Google. That's the Netplex site. There was a local website down there somewhere. And
I don't think we have that.
So it's correct. So Netplex has an address that doesn't exist.
Yeah, we're on Google Plus, and we're on Facebook. All right, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nick Francesco, you 39 minutes after the hour. Sound Bites, member supported, Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we have Bob from Pittsford on the line. What's up, Bob?
Hi, guys. I have a 2012 MacBook Pro.
Okay.
Upgraded to 16 gig RAM, and I'm current on software. I have a 500 gig hard drive, and I'm running out of space. So my question is, I've heard about these hybrid drives that are part solid state and part regular. Is that a good thing? Will that give me better performance? And a footnote part of the question is, I have a boot camp partition. Do you think that if I get the hybrid, would that run the boot camp partition also?
Generally speaking, yes. So a hybrid drive is part solid state flash drive for speed, and then part spinning mechanical drive for capacity. So as we mentioned earlier, solid-state drives generally cost twice as much as a mechanical drive at the same capacity. So,
Bob, if you're in your car, roll up your window, will you?
Actually, I'm outside walking. Sorry, I'll try to do better.
Yeah. So hybrid drives, the computer doesn't know it's a hybrid drive. It just sees capacity. And the drive itself generally watches what you do most and puts that on the solid-state version of it. There are also kits you can buy that will let you put the solid-state drive in one of your bays, usually the regular hard drive bay, and then you can replace the optical drive with your hard drive. So you can put two different drives in the computer, because a lot of people don't need optical drives anymore. So that way you can get the speed of the SSD and the capacity of the spinning drive. So you could get a 1 terabyte SSD, but you're probably looking at $400 or $500, versus a 1 terabyte HD is under $100. So that's one of the biggest difference between.
What size? If I go the two drive route, what size small solid state would you think?
Well, as much as you want to pay for. So it's generally you'd put on the solid state drive, you put your OS and your apps, because that would make booting faster, launching apps faster. And then on the hard drive, you would put your files, because that's where your most of your storage is. It does mean you have two drive icons and have to manage it yourself as to which drive you put stuff on. So that's why one drive can be more convenient for other people. And what's interesting with the hybrid drives is that most hard drives forever have had an internal cache. 32 gigs, 32 megs, 64 megs of internal cache to make things faster. So now what they're basically doing is just making that cache bigger. Put 32 gigs of cache on the spinning drive and calling it a hybrid drive.
Right.
You know, that's what they've always been. Just more of that fast capacity.
Okay, that's helpful. If I did the two drive route, what about the boot camp partition?
Does it matter? That doesn't matter. That would still be on your main hard drive. So you would have three boot options. You could boot the SSD, you could boot the old OS on the HD, or you can boot Windows on the HD.
Yeah. Okay. Feel like juggling, but that's a good option. Okay.
Yep.
Thanks very much.
Sure.
All right. Thanks.
And some of the hybrid drives, the cache is small. So I'm looking at a Seagate 1 terabyte hybrid drive. It's got 8 gigs of flash drive and then 1,000 gigs of spinning drive. And that's typically what you see on hybrid drives, 8 gigs, maybe 16 gigs of flash. So if you want more of the fast flash storage, then going with two drives is usually a better option.
Right.
But then there's more file management on your part by having two drive icons.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ed from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Ed. What's up?
Well, I got a problem with my browser. I use Opera, the latest version, and I contacted Opera, and they got into my computer to do some diagnostics and told me that there was a number of files in there that shouldn't be in there, and told me that they wanted me to update my security network. I'm currently using the Kaspersky Internet Security, and I believe that's rated the top three.
That sounds like it was a fake company trying to install.
Where did you get
things?
The phone number for Opera?
I got it off the internet.
Did you get it from opera.com? The actual.
Yes, it was.
Okay, so that doesn't make any sense.
No.
That sounds like a scam, that you were not really at Opera and it wasn't really Opera people on your computer.
Okay. Well, anyways, they wanted to do some further diagnostics, and I told them that I didn't have the finances to do it at that time.
Yep, bing. That's also a big clue that it was a scam.
Right. So, anyways, I've contacted a friend of mine that does computer repair, and I'm going to have him come take a look at it. But what I was wondering is, I know that when you load new software, it creates a file with the information in it, usually with the brackets around it. Now, those are necessary, or they're not necessary?
Well, I'm not quite sure what you're talking about, but if what you're talking about is, explain again what it is you're talking about, please.
Okay, down in your, I use the Windows Explorer, and down in the C drive area under users, there's a location that gives you all the different files that are loaded into your computer, and the individual files have brackets around them. They've got A95, something like that. They're quite long numbers. And I was just wondering if those are essential to have the program run, or if those can be deleted.
Well, without seeing them, I wouldn't say touch them.
You're right. No file, you can name a file whatever you want when you save it. It doesn't need brackets.
Well, what he may be looking at is
system files yeah.
From, for example, KB upgrades, fixes. Microsoft fixes, in which case, yes, you could delete those, but I don't know that those are exactly what you're looking at. So I personally would not suggest you do any deleting at this point.
And you can use the Windows Disk Cleanup Wizard to clean up those download files that are legitimate Microsoft download files.
Right.
Yeah. Alrighty, I appreciate your help, and you gentlemen have a wonderful afternoon.
I would suggest Dancing the Security Tango just in case.
Yeah, it's securitytango.com.
Because I was digging around the Opera website, and nothing on their website says they will do remote assistance.
And indeed, I couldn't find a phone number.
Right. They will send you into the forums
to
ask a question.
Again, like we've said before, banks, you know, these scammers can make it look like bank official bank websites.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they could put one up for Opera.
Right.
To get, you know, people scammed into that.
Right.
I mean.
So I would suggest Dancing the Security Tango immediately when your friend comes over to help you with your machine. Have him or her make sure that they do a real good look around and a cleaning if you didn't do the tango yet. And make sure that thing is clean.
We had a customer once that got tricked into that. And she told us that they were taking so long to do what they wanted on her computer. She just went to bed and left them.
Oh, geez, Louise.
Yeah, that's not so good.
But people don't know. We're programmed to obey instructions. And they're really good at scamming people. I sometimes wonder if it's a real the bad guy hired a real tech support company, and the company doesn't know it's a scam.
Mm-hmm.
These are the list of people that have problems. Call them and offer to help.
Well, but then I mean, once they're wandering around your computer, they got to know what they're doing. So.
Yeah. Yeah,
but it's very possible that what he got was a pop-up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you go into the forums, for example, it is possible for an unscrupulous person to stick a piece of code in there that would give you a pop-up that says, having problems with the Opera browser, call blah, blah, blah number.
Yeah.
So it is very, you know, and you might not get that because you got the pop-up blocked.
Yeah.
In fact, you got a number of them blocked already.
Yeah.
So, excuse me. You want to be very careful. No legitimate company that I know of will throw a pop-up on your machine that says, call us, we'll fix your problem.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. None. Zero. Exactly.
Haven't
zero.
Seen one yet? Nope.
No company will call you and say, we detected a problem on your computer. Let us in and we'll fix it.
And
no
especially
company
Microsoft.
That.
Yeah.
Especially Microsoft, but none of the big companies do that.
And well, that's the biggest one going around right now, because I had another person at work say, well, I got this call. They said they were from Microsoft, that my machine is seriously infected. I told them I have to get back to them, and then they hung up. I go, yeah, because it's a scam.
Yeah.
What one did I get a couple weeks ago on the Chromebook?
Yeah, that you were infected. With your something. Windows was infected.
Yeah,
call Microsoft.
Yeah. On my Chromebook.
Yeah.
You
think?
It's pretty much not going to happen.
And when you go searching for a company's phone number, you have to be very, very careful you're finding that company and not an ad for someone. So if you search for Microsoft phone number, you'll find hundreds of companies that could be legitimate Microsoft
support.
Registered support companies that are not Microsoft.
Right.
And you'll find all the fake companies claiming to be Microsoft support companies.
Right.
And I just didn't know this offhand, but the Opera web browser, Opera is a Norwegian company based in Oslo.
Right.
So
right.
if you didn't call Oslo, actually. You probably didn't call Opera.
Right. Right.
And if you did call Oslo, check your phone bill.
Check your phone bill. Exactly. It is sad, but it is true that the scammers are just out there looking for that stuff.
And product support is not available via telephone from any office, according to the Opera website.
There you go. All right. That music tells me we're... Don't sound quite so happy.
No, I'm shocked.
Oh, okay.
No.
We're done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. I want to thank everybody who called in. For those of you who all called in at the last minute, don't call in at the last minute. Call in earlier. Don't go away. George is in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael is here to keep him on the straight and narrow. And we will be back in just 100 and whatever it is, 66 hours, with more of the longest running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites right here on the truly great and solely member supported Jazz 90.1. See you next week. Have a great week, everybody.